Central Valley. It's time for the 940 ESPN Rye Show. The 940 ESPN Rye Show is brought to you by Bowman & Associates, Fashion Furniture, Van Buren Insurance, and Firehouse Subs. And now, here are your hosts, Nick Papagni and Matt Johnson.
Well, welcome. Good afternoon to all you in the Great Central Valley listening to 940 ESPN. This is Matt Johnson. This is The Rise, live here from Fashion Furniture. My little sidekick partner, the Pagmeter, well, he's out doing what I wish I was doing right now. He's in Atlanta, Georgia with the Nike football and athletic clinic, which is speaking to parents and other athletes and coaches in regarding to recruiting. And somehow somebody picked up on the Pagmeter's website and is offering him an opportunity to speak to a lot of families and, of course, conventioneers out in Atlanta, Georgia with Nike. Great job, Pagmeter. That's awesome news for you. Unfortunately for me, I'm stuck here alone. I'm going to have to carry this show the whole way, which I've had to do in the past. You know, it's just part of the game. Love what I see here at Fashion Furniture. The MLK sales went great. Lots of inventory here at the Palatial Palace of Fashion Furniture. We want to thank, obviously, our sponsor, Firehouse Subs. Thank you so much for basically taking care of local communities and, of course, our first responders. With everything you do, we thank you, Firehouse Subs, and all of our great sponsors on this show. We are The Rise. I'm Matt Johnson. I'll be taking you through. I want to thank Russ, as CG would say, our resident hockey guy. He's a hockey guy. And I use that accent because I'm from the West, and I love to always hear the beautiful accents from those who they say from the Midwest. I say from the Mideast because I'm coming from the West. But thank you so much for tuning in, and we're going to have a beautiful show today. We've got some unbelievable guests. When I got the word that Nick would be involved in this Nike deal, I decided I'd reach out to some of my good friends in the entertainment business and see if they would be able to help us out and carry us through the show and give our listeners in the Central Valley a little insight from other places in the country. My first guest who we're connecting with will be Sean Salisbury. Sean Salisbury was a unbelievable in the times of recruiting athletes from the days of the early 80s. There was no telecommunication setups for internet. There was no rivals, scout.com, and things like that. There was simply a couple of paper publications that announced, and Sean Salisbury was the number one high school recruited athlete, football player specifically, was drafted to play baseball for the Cincinnati Reds, and was an All-American basketball player, which we'll talk about that a little bit, and was recruited to play basketball at USC, UCLA, and many other programs. A true three-sport athlete. And then he went on from there and was a starting quarterback at USC, did some great things, was injured a few times, and then he led himself down that path, and we'll talk about that. He was a young guy that I roomed with for 5 years, and he dreamed of being in the business of broadcast journalism and follow that career goal into acting and things like that. And he got to live his dream. He's been in movies, good friend of Adam Sandler, and he's had an opportunity to really live life in the world of sports and entertainment beyond anyone that I've ever known in my career. And then we'll finish the show off with a young man by the name of Tom Cox. And Tom Cox is the epitome of going out and marketing and recruiting yourself to get to college. He has a story that's absolutely fabulous. He's a songwriter, and he's been very, very successful in raising splendid, gifted athletes, three boys who all played Division I sports, and his youngest son, Chandler Cox, is a starting fullback and outstanding football player for Auburn University. And he'll shed light on some of the great stories in recruiting. But before we get much further, last night, I got to attend, like I love following sports through the Valley, as Pagmeter does, and I got to go to the Bullard-San Joaquin Memorial basketball game. And it was really a battle, in my opinion. You can argue who's one, who's two, and who's three. But between Clovis West, Bullard High School, and, of course, San Joaquin Memorial, who plays in a division below Division I basketball, which is shocking in itself, they had a tremendous, tremendous game last night. And San Joaquin Memorial won by 3 points. What I consider one of the great games I've seen in recent memory for high school basketball. What makes it great? It was the setting. We talk so much and we're critical all the time about Fresno State Athletics and how we can't get the Save Mart Center filled to the brim when great opponents come into play, i.e. San Diego State last Tuesday night. Great win, by the way, for our Bulldogs. But in high school, when you have matchups like this, you better get there early because you know it'll be a jam-packed, full-packed house. And last night, Bullard, as the home team, through a hospitality event that was second to none. And it was great to be in attendance to watch young high school athletes run up and down the court and battle for what probably will turn out to be a CMAC league championship. Both schools will get a very high seed, if not be both one seeds, potentially for their run to Cellon Arena for the Valley Championships. But that was unbelievable to witness the athleticism on both sides of both teams. And the man who stood out for me was a transfer into San Joaquin Memorial from Layton, Utah, 7-foot junior Braxton Miha. And Pag Meter, my good friend and partner on this show, it sometimes is very critical of parts of San Joaquin Memorial Athletics. And sometimes I play counterpoint to him, and I jump in there and see the other side and speak of the other side. But nothing can be denied on one thing. San Joaquin Memorial is absolutely, based on word of mouth and marketing by doing things and winning contests and educating student athletes to go on to college, has created what I believe is the beginning stages of witnessing a private high school in our area reach the levels of what you see in Southern California and in northern parts of Northern California with the modern days, the St. John Boscos, the De La Salles in Concord, California. Last night was a moment, if we got done with the football season, of witnessing their football program, but last night was a moment to see that they are clearly moving in a direction where they potentially, over time, could turn themselves into one of those lofty areas I mentioned, a modern day of the Central Valley. And there's a lot of backlash to that. Clearly, there's a lot of people that are probably alumni or parents of students that attend that school that question themselves whether they want to slip back into Division IV or Division V, or do they like the progression of growing this program into be one of the state's elites. Myself, personally, I've always been very vocal. I enjoy watching at least one in a section. We play in the central section here of the CIF of California. At least have one program that plays what Nick Papagni calls the private professional game. If it's good enough for Southern California to have several Servites, Crespis, modern day St. John Bosco, Santa Margaritas, of all those schools that you see down there, Sarah San Mateo, Sarah High School in Los Angeles, if it's okay for those sections, then why do we have such backlash when one school seems to be making a move to having that type of caliber athlete transfer in, coming from all parts of America? And so when you look at an athlete like last night, Braxton Miha, the 7-foot junior from Utah, who comes in to play basketball for the San Joaquin Memorial Panthers, I like it. Some of you might not like it. If you don't like it, you can call into our show. 1-844-940-ESPN. That's 844-940-8776. You can talk about your opinions, but let's not get ourselves all riled up over doing what has been naturally been happening in this country of ours for so long, and now it's officially hitting the Central Valley. I applaud San Joaquin Memorial for what they're doing. It doesn't fit for everyone. I get that. But from my eyes, I enjoyed watching arguably the best basketball player in the entire nation in Jalen Green running up and down the basketball court and watching other basketball players from Bullard compete against that because they're really good too. I think it brings awareness to our valley, and I certainly think it leads to a great version of a spectator sport of watching those splendid athletes. And by the way, the opening tip-off went to San Joaquin Memorial. Jalen Green brought it to the wing, dumped it down low to the 7-footer, and for Nick Papagni, who's not here right now, well, Mr. Pagmeter, he kicked drop-step deal to two-hand slam dunk and delivered the full 7-foot frame for 2 points right out the game. That's when I realized that we're on a journey right now to witness other schools get into this level of competitive athleticism. Whether you like it or not, like I said before, it has arrived in our valley, and San Joaquin Memorial is leading the way. Now, having said that, I'd like to ask Russ right now. We connected yet with Sean Salisbury? Okay, good. Well, he's scheduled to come on in about 2 or 3 minutes, and we'll get to the area that he is involved with because he coaches kids. He's been involved in the world of entertainment from an acting. He worked with ESPN, NFL Live. He's had some controversial moments in his life, and he'll discuss that. But in the world of entertainment, he understands, I'm sure, I'll ask him, that when you're looking at what sports really is, it's a form of entertainment. In the world of high school that Nick Papagni and I report on, you have to keep it in the true spirit of amateurism. But what's going on in the world of Division I athletics and big college atmospheres from the world of basketball, football, and other sports, we're beginning to see and witness the professionalism begin to be drawn out of the dark shadows and come to the forefront. We have people that are talking about paying at the student athletes in college money or bigger stipend checks. We've looked at the share, fair share of the pie for these Power Five conferences as opposed to the group of six that are not getting the same ability to have conference monies and television deals. That just seems to be the nature of where we're headed. Is it gone all the way back to basketball? I think the high school basketball world saw from an early stage that high school basketball, specifically AAU, in your off-season exploits, that is professionalism at its highest point. You have large shoe manufacturers that have got themselves linked so much to the world of high school basketball. Is that truly high school amateur time? I don't believe it is. But having said that, I do believe that there has to stay a level of keeping high school at the true essence of being amateurs. So let's talk about the private schools. The private schools now could be ready to go at any point into that world of professionalism, but should they be competing only against like schools or like-minded teams that have a level of their roster, which is dotted with kids from all over parts of local communities and out of state? That's a debate that we can talk at a later time. Russ, if you would reach out to Sean, he just texted me back so you know. He just hit me up with he's ready to go. I don't know if he's got my text that he's supposed to call in, but if you could reach out to him, he says he's ready. Anyway, high school, San Joaquin Memorial, soccer. The girls' soccer team, 21-1-1, beat Bullard last night 4-3. Football, we know, they did it again on the football field and ran the table and went all the way to a potential state championship game. So they were in the game, but they didn't win the game. I think that is just the sign of where we're going. For the other programs that are left behind a little bit, because that's the beautiful thing about our CIF, is that we are allowed by this spirit of competitive equity that everyone gets a fair shot to compete against programs that are very similar to theirs. So as long as that competitive equity model is there, which they've adopted years ago, I think this level of competitiveness will stay. But I'm waiting still to see what the end result is in our valley. It's already hit Northern California, of course Southern California, but where does the private professional of CVC, San Joaquin Memorial, Garces High School in Bakersfield, where does it go? We'll follow and stay tuned to that. Having said that, gives me great pleasure and I'm proud to announce my guest who's going to lead us through the first part of our show for quite a while now. He is quite a comedian. He is somebody that I know very well because I lived with him for 5 years and we knew each other in high school. We're going to be talking with Sean Salisbury. Before I officially introduce Sean Salisbury, I'd like everyone to know that he is a man that had a dream when he was very young, and his dream came true. Without any further announcement, I'd like to introduce Sean Salisbury. Sal, how are you, kid?
Matty, I'm doing great, brother. Good to be on with you. I appreciate it. And you know what? Sometimes it's a different road to get there, but we got there, and it's good to be talking with you, and it's good to be on in the Valley, man.
Well, a little background. You were born in Long Beach, California, and you attended Orange Glen High School in Escondido, North County of San Diego. That's where I became familiar with you because you and I were the same age coming up in high school. And anyone who was growing up in San Diego during that era knew about this tall, 6'5", sensational phenom athlete who did everything from soccer, baseball, basketball, football. What a time you spent at Orange Glen High School. Please give us a little feel of your growth and maturation to where you became this iconic sports figure preparing yourself for college sports.
Yeah, and let's not forget getting constant technical fouls with arguing with referees in high school.
Well, I'm going to get to that. Everybody knows me knows that Sean Salisbury, every time someone complains about this kid here, I go, hey, you don't know about a guy that I grew up with, Sean Salisbury. This guy's style in the basketball game is nothing compared to what Salisbury would do. We'll talk about that. But tell us about your experience in Orange.
Yeah, never committed a foul in my life, and I got fouled every time, so you just ask me. You know what, man? Man, you know this, but to share with your listeners, I didn't play football until I got to high school. I didn't even know how to put pads in. I never played it down a Pop Warner. My football was putting Fred Biletnikoff's number 25 on the back of a white T-shirt and going to the park with my buddies and playing tackle football. Now, I've watched everything and read everything and been blessed with a photographic memory that I can remember stuff, but I never played. I didn't. I was a basketball and baseball guy, and I figured that was where I was going throughout my career. Was fortunate to get recruited in both, but I didn't play, but I played with my buddies, and we'd go out and throw, and I can remember at a young age, my dad and mom, they bought me like 40 different balls in a different size, and I'd carry them around to my when they'd go visit my aunt and uncle in a bag. And we were in Bellflower, California, and we were visiting my aunt, my mom's sister, and I was like 6 years old. And we would throw them over the house at 6 years old and go to the backyard and get them. And we left, and we lived about 45 minutes from them, and we left one weekend morning after staying over there and going visiting and having breakfast. We left that afternoon. And we were about 30 minutes into our drive, and I counted my ball, and I realized one was missing. And I was like, I can't do this. And my dad and mom laughed when they tell the story, and we drove all the way back to get that damn ball. But at a young age, I knew I could throw it, and I never had a private trainer or anything. It was just natural. My dad, as you know, and you've had the same kind of father, he was there to, after working his ass off in blue collar, he'd be there to go out and do whatever you wanted to do, to shag balls, whatever it meant.
That's right.
So, I didn't play, and then, you know, I got to high school in junior high, and this is a good message for tackle football is not for everybody, and neither is flag football. And we're at that time, Maddie, with all these injuries go on that parents are worried about their kids, and I get it. Now, I don't subscribe to that nobody should play tackle football and that everybody should. When I was in the seventh grade in Escondido, I played flag football. My PE teacher said, he watched me throw a ball once. He said, no, you're going to play football here. I said, well, I'm a basketball, baseball guy. He said, yeah, but I need you on my flag football team. And it was 11 on 11. We'd play other schools. And I learned about the mental, because, you know, when you're a young kid, you put your best athlete at quarterback in Pop Warner, and he handles the ball and he runs it. And most kids are a little bit nervous about getting hit at that age because you're the physical side, so you can't learn the mental side. And for me, with 11 on 11, even though I was bigger than all the kids, I learned how to read coverage in the seventh grade, because he was actually a really good teacher and coach, how to read coverage without knowing at the end of it that I was having to look at the pass rush. So it taught me a lot. So I got to high school, and my dad said, give it a try. And the athletic director had seen me throw and talked to the seventh grade at the high school and talked to the, you know, the Disney family. And had talked to my coach and said, go play and give it a chance. He can throw it. So Dick Disney and my dad talked me into it. And I went out, and the very first day of tackle practice, Tom Bice, he's a military guy who cut his hair about every 3 days and a great football coach and great man. I carried the ball, and we were running the speed option. And I got tackled in a scrimmage game, and the bone popped out of my middle finger and was a compound fracture. I went back to the huddle, and he looked at me, and he goes, get back in the huddle, Salisbury. And I said, Coach, this is – I didn't know how to put pads on, let alone do that. I said, Coach, that's my bone. And so I sat on the sidelines, put ice on it on one of those sandwich baggy ice things for 2 hours. We'd have cell phones. When I got done, we went up to the principal's office. He opened the principal's office. I called my mom and dad. They came and got me, took me to the hospital and said, if you'd have waited about 20 more minutes, infection would have set in. We would have cut off your middle finger on your throwing hand. Well, I sat out that year until the last two games, came back, had a blast, played my JV year, and the rest is history. But I always loved basketball and baseball, and I was that kid when I'd come home, do my homework, set my books down, and was out dunking on a 7-foot basket, whatever. I just played, and I kept playing, and I kept playing. And then eventually it got to the point where the decision had to be made on what sport to choose. But football was my last love, not my first.
Well, we're talking with Sean Salisbury. You know, we're going to get into your level where you and I kind of came in contact. But, you know, you were truly, truly your phrase, your catchphrase, before there was the talk of Cordell Stewart, the great Colorado quarterback, went on and played with the Pittsburgh Steelers, Baltimore Ravens. They called him Slash. I remember as a senior in high school and going into freshman year at USC, you were always talking to people, oh, he's Slash. That guy right there, he's a model actor, football, whatever it is. You were truly Slash. You were involved in a lot of different sports growing up as a kid. But the thing that interests me as we grow older now with the advent of of communications and technology and rivalscout.com, all that stuff. You
right.
were the guy, and you would never say this, but let me brag about you a little bit. You were the number one recruited high school athlete in America. You were the five-star number one guy on the board, if we had to do it this way. Did you recognize that you were being looked upon as the number one recruited, not just football now, you were an All-American basketball, 26.5 points a game guy, like I said, drafted to play baseball. Were you aware of that, or you just thought, this is kind of neat, all of a sudden these people are showing me all this interest?
You know what, Matty, you grew up in the same kind of family I did. And you know, when Bob Lee would come on and talk recruiting back in the day on ESPN, when that was the one recruiting thing, when ESPN would announce the top recruits that are considering signing. Now the hardest part for me, and this sound, I don't mean this in an egotistical way, but I wasn't used to it. I come from a blue collar family where I couldn't have gone to USC or any of those. We'd have been going to some smaller school. My parents couldn't afford that. And so my whole life, it was just spent, and I didn't do it out for a scholarship. I didn't know. I wanted to get an education, but I did it because I loved it. And I did. I friggin' loved it. I loved playing three. And I remember one summer I was playing, and my dad said, if you're going to sign up to play these sports during the summer, we're not going on vacation. And if we go away, you can't go, because that means practice,
yeah.
too. Because my dad knew about the committee. He said, you commit to these teammates. You're not going on vacation. That's just the way it is. And one summer I was playing the American Legion Baseball, and we had a game in the morning at 10 o'clock. Then we had to drive to San Diego. As you know, playing in that 7-on-7 passing league down there in San Diego. We did that.
Yep.
And
yep.
then I came back for a summer league basketball game that night at 7 o'clock, all three in one day. And I loved it. It wasn't a grind for me. So it was just work. And that was the way it was. Like I said, I didn't have a private trainer teaching me how to throw. I'd just watch. And I'd watch.
Yep.
But as far as knowing, I guess when – you know, when your high school coaches are coming up to you and saying, this is different, dude, University of Texas is here as a sophomore. And the truth is, I was getting recruited in baseball and basketball even before football, because they could see it. I never went to a football camp, but I went to Arizona State baseball camp and, you know, the Superstars camp, the Invite camp in San Diego down there in Point Loma. I went to those camps. And so I guess
yes.
when you measure yourself against other guys, I kind of knew. And when you play against basketball players that were first the McDonald's All-American and you hang 39 on them, you think, well, I kind of get an idea that I think I'm pretty good at it, and I was confident, but I also knew that I had to work. But I guess the hardest thing, you know, you'd come home, and you knew this, when Jed Hughes at UCLA was recruiting us and John Robinson,
yeah.
and when you're lined up, and it was different, because I can remember one time, and you knew where I lived up in those hills there, that at one time there were six cars placed outside, and they each got an hour, and Cal would drive away, Stanford would be next. It was weird. And then there'd be
yeah.
times you just wanted to be a kid, and there'd be 25 letters, and you're like, oh, I don't want – and I know it sounds sport. I didn't mean it. Now you look back, you say, what a great opportunity. But I just wanted to come home and go to my buddies and hang out and go play
right.
basketball on the court. But my dad would say, you know, UCLA's coming, so or USC. So that's how it came about. And then, you know, when you open up a magazine and they got you the number one ranked, I guess I knew, but I never took it for granted. Now, in this day and age with social media, you know how that would have went. You got to
yeah.
manage
yeah.
everything, and it would have been – and I get the exhaustion, because even then for you, and it was exhausting then, because you hate turning down a coach. But I guess I knew, because when you're playing Patrick Henry and 40 scouts are in there, the recruiters are in the stands, and you look up at your basketball and John Robinson and 18 other coaches are watching you play a basketball game, it was weird. But, Matty, I'll
yeah.
tell you an interesting thing, and you know this, is before I signed, and now leading up to with early signing day, every move you and I made or would have made, it would have been talked about. It's just these kids have a big burden to bear. And my dad would have never let me say, here's five hats, choose one, and toy with them. My dad would have said, pick the hat and tell them. We're not going to
yeah.
mess with anybody's emotions. So I can remember John Robinson and Paul Hackett were at my buddy's house, his last visit before I went on after my recruiting trip to sign. And he
yep.
was there with Paul Hackett. He had his 1978 national championship ring on, and he said to me, we were going through, he goes, Sean, I want you here. You're our number one recruit. We're going to create an environment for you to be great in, and you're going to practice against the best every day. And if things go the way they're supposed to and you keep working, you'll be as good as we've ever had. He looked me in the face and told me that. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm 17. And then at the end, his last comment to me before he walked out the door with my mom and grandma and me and my father and my friend, he said, but I will tell you this. Now think about how many people are making you promises this day and when we were playing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
We'll give you a car, or you're going to start as a freshman.
I yeah.
tell recruits, if somebody's promising you something, steer away from that university. Well, he looked at me and he said, but I will tell you this, as much as we want you, if you don't show up and play at USC and sign with us, we are still going to show up on Saturday, and we are still going to win. And that was a humbling thing. It took me back because, if you know, we all get a little bit arrogant and kind of take things for granted. When he walked out, I looked at my parents. I said, man, and my dad looked at me and said, you want to be a part of that. And the rest is history, and I ended up signing with him. So I guess I knew at an early age, because when you're playing, you're six and you're playing with nine-year-olds in baseball, but it was out of love. Now, it's not like some guy was training me and said, dude, you got a big arm, go play. It was just simply out of love. And you know me, ultra-competitive. I wanted to fight everybody. I wanted to compete all the time. It didn't matter what it was. And it ended up being a free education, a scholarship, and has carved out a career. And, well, I met you, and my best friends in the world come from sports.
Well, Sean Salisbury, we're talking with, who's you'll probably remember Sean from, if you watched Comedy Central, the original first season of BattleBots, his time spent with ESPN, NFL Live. You were the NFL analyst, just great stuff. And then of course now you're Sports Talk Radio, Houston, Texas, 3 to 6 drive time hours. You've just been an entertainer. You've movies, which we're going to get to. When you're talked all this sports, okay, I get the background. But now, when you were young, were you recognizing that you were kind of a character in the classroom, that you could, because when we hooked up as freshman roommates, you would sit there and I would sit there and you would plot out your strategy. You'd turn the TV volume down. You would call the games. You told yourself that one day I'm going to be a sports broadcast guy. I'm going to be an entertainer, maybe an actor too. Were you aware of that as a kid, or did that all happen when you arrived on the campus of USC?
I think I had an idea in high school, because I can remember, now, quick wit and all that. This comes, my mother is the talker, and my dad didn't say much, you were like your family to them. So, and
King Richard.
And so the king, and God bless him. I miss him every single day. But my mom's doing great. She's in Vegas. So I think I knew, because, I worked hard in class. I worked, but I also knew growing up that, my dad told me, my dad was a plasterer by trade in the construction business, and he told me, we'd go out and carry, I'd mix his plaster and mix it for him, and then I'd be his hod carrier, where we'd go up and have to push that wheelbarrow up to on top of the scaffolding, and he'd be there, and my sister was better at it than any of us, my oldest sister, but we'd do it. My old man would look at me on a Saturday in the off-season and say, you ain't cut out for this, you don't want to do this. Use that brain and that right arm of yours. And that mouth. Yes. My dad used to laugh about that. I didn't shy. He taught us how to work, but I thought, okay. And I can remember I would go out in my house when I was in the sixth grade, seventh grade, and I would be the Lakers versus the Celtics. And I would broadcast. I was every player, but I was also the broadcaster. Or I'd my mom and dad's king-size bed. I would be Vin Scully calling the Red Sox-Dodgers game and making diving catches on the bed with the baseball, or reciting the 70s We Are Family Pittsburgh Pirates, every single player on the, and I studied it, and it came easy, and I loved it. And so it led to, and this, when you're getting interviewed in the sixth grade, you got to learn, you either embarrass yourself, or you got to learn how to be a little bit more poised on camera. And it was not a lot of things may come natural to many of us in life, but it was like the good Lord said, you're going to be able to do this. And I feel like I haven't worked a day in my life because of my career of playing it and broadcasting it and being able to teach it and coach it, and that, and make a difference, and you hope people's lives along the way and make them laugh. But
that's right.
I think, when you and I got together, we might have been the next Laurel and Hardy, and we might have been the best comedy duo on the planet. But you can't force those things; it either comes or it doesn't. And I was just born with that gene. And there's a lot of genes that they left out, but this one I had. So
I hear you.
I kind of knew, but the broadcasting part came from I would do it all the time. It's just like when we played sports, I would broadcast while I was playing.
Well, we're going to call that. It's hang in there with me, Sean. I've got to take my first break. We're going to come right back. We're visiting with Sean Salisbury. We want to talk about, and get ready, because I want to hear some Jackie Stewart. You're not just a sports broadcaster. You also are sports, of course, but you also do a little auto racing too. And I want to hear your best short version of Jackie Stewart. When we get back, we're visiting with Sean Salisbury, a real, real slash entertainer. We'll be back. You're listening to 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader.
The Rice Show is sponsored by Bowman & Associates, Fashion Furniture, Van Buren Insurance, and Firehouse Subs.
We are back live, Fashion Furniture. I'm Matt Johnson. This is The Rise, ESPN 940. We're doing it here. We want to thank Fashion Furniture for all they do for the local community. You want to come out here and see the showroom. It's unbelievable here in the Sports Zone ESPN studio. Of course, we want to thank Firehouse Subs. And by the way, anyone out there listening, you want to make a deal? Let's make a deal right now, Firehouse Subs. If you mention you heard this on air on the Rise Show, you get half off on the new. You've got to try the spicy Cajun chicken sandwich. I'm having a bite right now. Unbelievable. Check out Firehouse Subs, the spicy Cajun chicken. Mention you heard the announcement on the Rise or on ESPN, and they'll give you 50 half off your purchase of the sandwich. Half off on the spicy Cajun chicken. We're visiting with Sean Salisbury, my best friend, college roommate, teammate, grew up in the same area. And by the way, when we were in Phoenix, Arizona as kids, we didn't even know this until later in life, that his neighborhood was right behind mine in Arizona and Phoenix when he grew up as a kid. Welcome back, Sean Salisbury.
Thank you. It's fate, brother. Those things you couldn't write in a novel, man. So this is a damn near 40-year friendship, and it's never wavered. So I appreciate you and love you, brother.
No, I love you too, kid. Now, you're Sports Talk Radio Houston 790. Great show. I've watched you and the Sean Salisbury show on nationally televised. Of course, your stuff, your great work with college analysts, NFL analysts, and what you did at ESPN. But you were quite a character, and we've been very serious about, you know, the life that we grew up together and the virtues and the things that your father, my mother, we taught us as kids. But let's talk about the entertainment side of Sean Salisbury. You started in college, you wanted to be in the spin department, which is sports broadcast journalism, Sean. Will Ferrell, yeah, another alumni of USC. By the way, he was a young kid coming in when you were at, you guys probably bumped. Do you know Will Ferrell, by the way? You ever bumped into him?
I do. And real quick, Matty, about that, Will and I have seen him on SC sidelines, but we were in Chicago. I was at Mike Ditka's steakhouse for their like rap party for Kicking and Screaming, that soccer movie.
Yes.
And Ferrell was there with his wife and Colin, you know, with Sandler, and I'm sure we'll get to him. But with Ferrell,
yes,
we were standing there, and I went up to him. We were in a back room, and Ditka had invited a bunch of people there. And I saw Will. I said, "Hey, man, how you doing?" I said, "You got to do." He was with his wife. And comedians, the one thing people, those guys, they're on. They have to be on all the time. So when they're not on, they're just, you wouldn't know it. I mean, they're just very, they're I don't know, subdued may not be the right, but they're relaxed. They kind of,
yes,
lay low. Ferrell, Sandler, very similar to where you think, oh, comedian, they got to be doing this all the time. And I'm sure some are, but not them, because when that light switch goes on, they know how to turn it on. So we were sitting, I go, "Will, you got to give me some Harry Carey," you know, in front of all these people. And we walk back in, because he does a great Harry Carey.
Yes, he does.
You know, like, "Hey, everybody, pop fly towards this guy, Eloy drops it. Hey, how can a guy who plays 370 days a year in the Dominican Republic drop a pop fly? Hey, Tommy, look at this. Sandberg spelled backwards is grabbing ass. Hey, everybody." So he starts, he walks in, he goes, "Sean, not tonight." I go, "Come on, please." He walks in there, and for about 5 minutes, Matty, he put on a Harry Carey voiceover. I mean, you've seen him do it on Saturday,
yes,
Night Live and all. They were, Ditka's wife literally fell out of her chair laughing on the floor. It doesn't matter how many times you hear him do it.
That's
so
right.
Yes, I've been fortunate through this. That's, I think, in getting back to all the serious stuff, but the laughs you and I have had over the years and meeting some of these people, I miss that. That's the most important thing to me. The paychecks are great and all that, but the most important thing is I laid up in bed till like 2:30 in the morning last night thinking of relationships and from high school,
yes,
to college and how much they mean. And the older you get, hopefully we appreciate them younger, but the more I appreciate it. And the laughs are beyond belief.
Well, the funny thing is, Sean, if I can just say one thing that, you know, I look back and the blessings of that time in life is I had the foresight, or at least the luck of making a pact with you to be roommates, and the life I got to lead in those 5 years in college together, hanging out with the USC quarterback, and I'm sure it never changed from you to Rodney Pete to Matt Barkley to Matt Leinart. The quarterback gets to hang at the best parties. The quarterback gets to be introduced. The quarterback gets to be introduced to the best sports agents group in the world. The quarterback gets to hang out with women that I never would have dreamed I'd be at parties with. And you were that guy. And so the one that gets me is that I'll never forget being in a party with you. And you'd always bring me along. And we became, like you said, this Laurel and Hardy college teammate group. And I'm sitting at a party in Los Angeles. And at the bar, and you're talking to one guy, and you said, "Hey, hang on a minute, I got to talk to Sly." And I'm thinking, "Sly, yeah, Sylvester Stallone." So there's Stallone, there's Rob Lowe, there's all these entertainers, And they gravitated to you because you were the USC quarterback. And I know you had a couple of nice little experiences going on dates with people like Heather Locklear and the funny times we had living together. And I want to thank you for being the guy that you are, but allowing me to join along for those rides. And then you move in, which is getting to the acting and the entertainment side of you. How did you meet Adam Sandler? And tell us about The Longest Yard, the movie you were in, Benchwarmers. How did that come about, and how is Adam Sandler doing?
First of all, you're thanking me. You're still my best friend after all these years. You deserve a Purple Heart, having to live with me and deal with my obsessive compulsive behavior and superstition and all that, and just deal with it. And, you know, every now and again, when a guy is a big brother in a sorority and comes back drunk, and you make sure that I'm tucked away and not doing something stupid. That's what friends do, man. And so I should be thanking you. But, you know, we did have fun, man. We went to some of the greatest Planet Hollywood, but we had a blast in Playboy Mansion. We had fun. And I still, to this day, I always tell you, when I brought Heather Locklear to meet you back at the apartment in Westwood, and that summer of the 84 Olympics, and you weren't there. And I had her write you a note saying, Molly,
she wrote me a note.
We still laugh about it to this day.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Times had by all. You know what? The entertainment. Here's how it happened. I was doing, working at ESPN. I got a call. It was after the Pro Bowl one year, and I got a call left in my voicemail at ESPN. And I said, and I didn't return the call. It said, "So this is so and so from Happy Madison Productions and Sony Pictures. Could you call us back?" I'd never. Yes. The only time I'd ever met Sandler before then was Dan Fouts and I would do the Chargers preseason games on TV. And because of Waterboy, he came in during one preseason game, talked to Dan for like 2 minutes during a commercial break. I said, "Hey, man, I love your work." That was it. We didn't talk 12 seconds. And so I got a call, and I waited a week. It called back and left another message. So I said, well, because I thought it was one of my buddies being a smart aleck. I did. So it's the offseason. So I pick up the phone, call back, and I said, "Barry Bernardi, please." And when you see the credits, he's always like the executive producer for Happy Madison. I called back. I said, "Barry," they said, "just a second. Who's calling? This is Sean Salisbury." "Oh, just a second, Mr. Salisbury." So he gets on the phone. I said, "Barry, Sean," he goes, "hey, it's great to hear from you." He said, "hopefully you know we're doing a remake of The Longest Yard." I said, "Yeah, I guess that's the news out." I said, "What can I do for you?" He said, "Well, we got Paul Crewe, and we need somebody to train the quarterback." And I simply said to him, I said, who's Paul Crewe? You know, it was Burt Reynolds in the original. And he said, "Adam Sandler." And I laughed. I said, "Adam Sandler's playing Paul Crewe. You got to be." And I laughed and said, "You better have a whole lot of money if I'm going to be the one training him, because that's going to be a chore." And he laughed. He said, "Oh, don't worry about that." And so we talked for about 10 minutes about what the expectations were. I said, "I'd be honored." I said, "But why me?" And Marino, still to this day, Dan gives me a hard time, and he did it on HBO later that year. He said, "Salisbury couldn't drop it in the ocean if you're standing on a beach. Why'd you hire him?" And Sandler jokes about it with him when it was on an HBO when the movie came out. And so I asked, and he said, "Well, Sandler seen you on TV and heard that you're a good teacher and he likes your personality," and that's how. So within a week, I'm flying out to L.A. from Connecticut, and we set in. I go in there, and he's wearing high-top tennis shoes and athletic shorts and Spades walking around and Rob Schneider, the whole group. So I go in there, and I tell my agent, I said, "Man, what am I supposed to say to Sandler? Because this is his world now. We're at the Sony Pictures lot, and our offices are like you'd expect Sandler, and he's the most loyal guy on the planet, and he's everything you think about him and 10 times better. He is as great a friend as you can meet in that industry. So, and is unique and is honorable." And so I walked in there. I said, "Okay, man, I'm just going to tell him what I expect, and he's going to tell me what he expects." And an hour later, I said, "Well, here's what I expect from you." And he said, "Well, here's what I expect from you." We signed the contract. The next morning, I'm at his house. Go over to his house. He's with his wife. She's in a robe. He's eating breakfast. He's in his pajamas. Matzo ball. His dog comes to the door. He says, "Hey, Salisbury, so wait here. Let me finish breakfast." We get it. We go throw for about a half hour. He said, "All I want to do is throw 40 yards. I said, "I'll have you doing that, but I need you to lick your fingers the way a quarterback does. Wear the eye black. All those little games, and you see him in the movie doing it. We practiced as well as, I said, I want you to be the guy that throws most of these balls because my name's on the line too. If it doesn't look like it, I'll get blamed." And he laughed. Yeah. We forged a friendship, and he did a great job. And I trained him, and then he put me in the movie. And then he goes, the next time he said, "I got a great role for you in Benchwarmers." Well, as you know, and then I was in almost all that movie, and we forged a friendship. There's times I'll see him up courtside at a Laker game, and I'll text him, and he'll text right back. He just is Matt, you would love him. He's one of us. And he's one of those guys that you say, You know, there's never an issue. He's always honorable, and he's loyal to his friends, as you see with all those same guys in the movie. He cares about kids. I love him, man. He treated me, and heck, he was in the jungle filming a movie in Hawaii with Jennifer Aniston, that one with the supermodel, yep, where he was acting, yep, like they were married. He, yep, called my daughter had her final project in the eighth grade. He stopped down for 20 minutes of filming and went on and did an interview with her for nothing, stopped production. And so that's the type of guy he is. And so whether you like some of his movies or not, he's the guy that you think he is, and he, you know, loves to play basketball. We had to play basketball 2-on-2 every single day. I trained him for about 4 months. Every time we had to play basketball before we'd go throw, because he loves hoops. And that's how. And you know what? He's a sneakier athlete than people think. And he, as a good actor, he knows how to do it. And he's been friends for. I keep telling him when Wins Bench Warmers 2 coming back. I've asked him. I said, instead of me being the guy who likes guys, which there's nothing wrong, but in the movie, yeah, yeah, my buddy say, Sean, no, you know, you're the gay mean coach, which was fine. I said, I'll do, yeah, it. And we're sitting around doing our read, and John Lovitz is there. I'm like, man, I'm out of my element here. We're talking about these guys do theirs. My element isn't this. It was overwhelming, yeah, and intimidating. Yeah. And then you, yeah, watch those guys and how they do their, and then why they're so good at it. But I said, the next time, can I please be the guy who has like 4 girlfriends in the movie and they're all hot, and so I can, my buddies don't give me a hard time. But that's how it's forged. And between that and House Bunny and Longest Yard, we forged a friendship that he's been great to me ever since.
Well, I've got it. There's so many. We're going to do this again. Please allow me to do this. But we got about another 6 minutes or so, 7 minutes. Tell me about your you've got relationships all over. I saw you on Dan Patrick. Quickly, I'll give you a minute without getting into the gory details. But the funniest thing I've ever seen on television was Dan Patrick interviewing you and talking about Mitch Kupchak. And you, Kupchak. Please tell me the Kupchak.
Dan loves it. Because Dan and I would obviously did his show together. We've been... Anyway, yeah, he was like one of my mentors, and I've learned a ton from him. And I go on with him, you know, periodically throughout the football season.
Yes.
I'll probably
be
on with him at the Super Bowl. But him and I and Paul Papps, you know, one of the Danettes,
yep,
we were at a place, and we used to kid people about Kupchak. Well,
yep,
all of a sudden, Mitch Kupchak walks in. Dan loves this story. Mitch Kupchak walks in where we are during the Super Bowl week, and he says, Sean, you can't. I said, what do you mean I can't? I said, this is the perfect, I said, you'll live stories for this forever. I got to go Kupchak. And he said, and so I said, you know, Mitch, and I Kupchak, Mitch Kupchak lightly, but I Kupchak. And Dan's got more yardage and more real estate out of that than,
oh, yeah,
he's had. So I've been crying laughing. One time a buddy of ours, we were in Scottsdale for spring training, and a buddy of ours came back, and we Kupchaked him, and he had a cup on. He was so,
yeah,
prepared for the Kupchak. He wore a cup. Yeah, I'm Mitch Kupchak, and there's no better story than that. And Dan is a great storyteller, so awesome.
There is, and I appreciate that. For those of you who are wondering, Kupchak, what is it? Just picture the cup that the baseball players wear. They got a cup. You got to check that cup. Or if you're in a mixed, yep, martial arts match, you walk into the arena, the guy always checks down there. You got your cup ready, you're good. And that is a classic Salisbury. Then the other one, too, that always gets me. anytime you're in any conversation, you personally, with the great guy, the guy you call Chuck, Charles Barkley, and you are great friends from way back. How's Charles doing, and how did that relationship get started?
Yeah, he's awesome. He'd come to my golf tournament just through sports. And,
yeah,
we met, and then we started, and it happened when I was early in my career because he lives in Arizona. And in my off seasons when I was with the Vikings,
that's
were
right,
spent there in Scottsdale, and we became friends, and he would come to my tournament, and he loved, you know, a lot of people, because of the things, he's pretty brash on television and gets after it, doesn't mince words with his opinion. And so that kind of was the same way for me, and we kind of forged that. And now, in every call he comes on, he was just on for like 30 minutes about a month ago. And you know how when he gets rolling, brother, he'll talk about anything, politics,
yeah,
race, sports, football. I played golf with him. We used to play golf. And when you see that swing, I always kid him. I said, dude, you're still fatter than I am. And there's nothing sensitive about him. He is. Another thing, I always say one of us, meaning he's a guy that no matter,
yes,
where you go, can blend in, and you'd love him too. But we talk,
yes,
the last thing we talk for the most part is basketball. Other than that, we're talking everything else. And I've had many fun nights in different cities laughing and carrying on, and days on the golf course. And I always told Charles, and then you got great hands around the green, but I can't watch you play golf because it screws me up with that 8-piece takeaway. But he is,
yeah,
he is sensitive, and he's,
yep,
he's another guy that you call up and give you the shirt off his back. When he commits to something, he lives up to it. And one of these days, you're going to stand next to him and meet him, and you're going to cry laughing, because he is a guy that If it's on your bucket list of guys you want to play in a foursome, Chuck has to be one of them.
Yeah. No question. Well, we're getting close up to against the break here. Sean, when are you on air? You got to leave and get on to your show, or how much time do you have left?
I'm on 3 to 6 Central, so in about 8 minutes, and I've done all my preparation. Oh. You can have me on anytime. If there's more stories. Dude,
right on.
I am so honored to be on with you. I love you.
Super Bowl, who do you like? I know Tom Brady, greatest of all time. Yeah. You've mentioned that many times, and now he's even beyond that. Because, by the way, 2 years ago you were telling everybody, what are you talking about? He's not done yet. He's got more in him. And sure enough, now we're looking at 2 more Super Bowls for him. So who do you like in the Super Bowl, quickly?
He's not just the best quarterback. I think he's the best player of all time. And I know some people
are
sensitive.
That's right.
Yes, he is. He spent half his career in the Super Bowl. I mean, if I gave you $500,000 and said, Matt, this is your last $500,000. And I said, you're going to go broke, or you're going to triple your money or whatever. And you had to bet it on one team in this Super Bowl, and you had to bet it, all of it. Who are you going to bet it on?
Yep. Yeah, Patriots.
You're going to bet it on Brady. That's not that the Rams can't win, but there's never been a guy whose blood pressure goes down in the heat of a moment when everybody else's blood pressure's up better than Brady. Best of all time. I think it's going to be close. But I'll take Brady to win his 6th, and I just think he's spectacular, and he's not done yet. He'll probably go back again next year. I'm a huge fan. Yeah. I think he's the best I've ever seen.
Well said, and great time visiting with you. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day out there in beautiful Houston, Texas, and all you do. I'll be seeing you at that La Jolla event that you're going to be putting on.
Oh, yes, you will, and if you need me on post-Super Bowl to talk about it, let me know.
I will. You know me. We're back in it together. Love you too, kid. Thank you so much, Sean Salisbury. We're going to take a break. You're listening to 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader. Well, here we're live here, Fashion Furniture 940 ESPN. That was a great visit there with Sean Salisbury. We want to thank Firehouse Subs. Hey, listen, quickly before we go to our next break, if you want to get a deal, go visit Firehouse Subs, get the spicy Cajun chicken, and mention you heard it on 940 ESPN, and you'll get half off the spicy Cajun chicken sandwich, Firehouse Subs. We'll be back, and we'll finish up with some great stories of family and sons from Tom Cox out of Xenia, Ohio. We'll be back. You're listening to 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader.
Central Valley, it's time for the 940 ESPN Rye Show. The 940 ESPN Rye Show is brought to you by Bowman & Associates, Fashion Furniture, Van Buren Insurance, and Firehouse Subs. And now, here are your hosts, Nick Papagni and Matt Johnson.
We are back live, Fashion Furniture. This is The Rise on 940 ESPN. I'm Matt Johnson. Normally, sitting next to me would be Nick Papagni, the Pagmeter. He is out in Atlanta, Georgia. He got invited to go back and talk a little bit about this website and this development that he's doing on his own in social media for local high school athletics to the people of the Nike Coach of the Year Clinic people. It's just amazing to me. I'm the coach. He gets to go on the trip. I am lost on this one. But he'll be back next Thursday. Look forward to having him back. Hope all is safe on the road. I really enjoy the heck out of this show to this point because I got a chance to reflect back on some of my relationships I've gained over my years and being an athlete, a student athlete, and, of course, getting a chance to rub shoulders with a lot of great people. And this next guest is no different, but he comes from a whole different perspective, a real self-made, as all my friends are that made it in the world of entertainment or sports or business. But this gentleman here, his name is Tom Cox, and he comes from Xenia, Ohio. And I met him at USC. He was our starting center, offensive lineman for 2 years, Rose Bowl champion, played some time in the NFL, and raised arguably, of all my friends and my associates, he's raised 3 boys. I hope I get that right, but 2 of which I really followed, Dakota and Chandler Cox, and they both were great Division I, big impact college football players. And the one son, Chandler, University of Auburn, starting fullback, H-back. I watched him knock Alabama Crimson Guides on their keister. I mean, just love watching someone I know and his sons go through the process of being a recruited athlete. And he's going to have great stories to tell. At this point, I'd like to introduce, live now, living in Phoenix, Scottsdale, Arizona, big timer, Mr. Tom Cox. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm happy as can be. I'm going down a little walk of memory lane. I just was entertained by Sean Salisbury in the first hour. Now I get Tom Cox, two of the most, I would consider, what is the term I would look for? Something in the area of not just a thespian or an actor, but a real innovator of creative ideas that goes beyond the world of Smash Mouth football. You are a songwriter, a great musician in your own right, and, of course, a great father. We're doing great, Tom. I'm so happy you called in.
No, I appreciate you having me today. We got a lot of memories together, so it's nice to be here. And, of course, you, me, and Sean have a lot of memories. So it was a great time back at FC.
No question. Now, Tom Cox, you are currently living in Phoenix, Arizona. Is that correct?
Scottsdale, North Scottsdale.
Scottsdale. Yep, where the big timers live. The rich and famous live out in Scottsdale. You know, I grew up in like Glendale, Arizona, but you get to hang out in Scottsdale. What a gem. Yeah.
I'm not by
you know,
Tom, the peak in Four Seasons, so it's nice.
There you go. Well, I was thinking of you, getting ready for you to get you on the show last night, and I thought to myself, if there's ever been someone in the history of my sports life that truly was self-motivated and got things done on his own, it would be you. You grew up in the town of Xenia, Ohio. Tell me about 1974 and one of the greatest biggest disasters in the history of America with the tornado. Give me that feeling. You must have been about 11 or 12 years old. Let my listeners in on what happened.
11 years old, Matt. 11.
Yeah.
Gosh, you remember that. I guess
yes.
We talked about that a lot of times. But
we did.
Yeah, that was the big tornado in April, and I remember that was when President Nixon came to town, believe it or not. That's where you go way back. A big helicopter came in and it had, you know, national disaster. And we lived through that. And, you know, that's, you know, one of the times when it just sits in the memory. And I remember the tornado and, you know, it didn't affect our house. However, it wiped out a lot of houses around us. So,
well, that period, there was about a 24-hour period or 18-hour period, I read, that was probably there was like 478 tornadoes that hit that region of South and Midwest area, and it wiped out and killed several people. It was the second largest disaster tornado in the history of our country. Do you remember as a child, did your mother grab you and huddle the boys all up, or what was the feeling as the storm hit?
That was, that day lives with you naturally, and that was the day I learned the Lord's Prayer. I'll tell you, my mom grabbed us, huddled us in the hallway, and I remember it was, you know, the sound of a tornado, you know, at a distance. And at that time, I don't think they had an F5 category, but, I mean, they categorized now, and it had to be an F5 because we had so many tornadoes at that time.
It was F5.
Probably an F5, and it wiped out. I believe that there were fatalities, about 26 people died, but we had the National Guard there. We had, I remember walking downtown with my dad after you know, the tornado, and everything was just devastated. I mean, it just looked like a big bomb went off. And, I mean, you know, that affects you, and you look at it, and you know, you just don't know what that means until you see it, everything turned over. I mean, buses on schools and, you know, just all the, you know, things going on at one time.
Now, you remember that, obviously. Anybody would remember that. But, you know, we went to USC, and how peculiar is that our head coach, Ted Toner, lived through one of the great tragic disasters with Cal Poly football going down and losing several administration athletes and people in a plane crash. So did you ever get a chance when you played football at USC to relay your tragedy to Coach Ted Toner and his Cal Poly plane crash?
No, that's a good point. I never did, and I remember we talked about that a lot of times. I mean, you and I, we had a few white knuckle flights, you know, going on the trips. And I remember some of those, but no, I never talked to Coach Toner about that.
Interesting. Well, you now going back to your self drive and determination to become somebody in your world, coming out of Xenia, Ohio, and thinking about being a USC Trojan, it could have been anyone for that matter, but you went on your own self-marketing campaign. Tell us about how you got yourself in the forefront of the coaches of USC.
Well, you know, back in 1981, there wasn't an internet, and it was one of those times when you know, being 6'5" and 230 pounds in high school, and I remember my junior year that my coach used to, you know, even call me Timid Tom all the time. And, you know, that was the offensive line coach, the D-line coach. And the head coach told me, he goes, "You're never going to play D1 football." And I'm like, "Can I borrow the tapes, you know, after the season?" And I really, you know, taking it upon yourself. I mean, I went out and, you know, I had an idea, and I just thought, you know, I'm a big guy, and I should be able to play. And, you know, there's got to be somebody that wants me to play. And I went and got one of those farmer, like an almanac, And I started just writing schools in 1981.
You know, wow. For them.
Yeah, and just a short note. It was, hi, I'm Tom Cox. Run a 4.9, 6'5", 230 pounds, and I'd like to play football. I mean, I wrote schools that didn't have football teams. I had no idea. Davidson College, I mean, they didn't have a football team back there. I thought about that.
Well, you know, there are stories like that, and there's no question that this is not the first time that something like this has happened. But you drew the attention of the perennial national player, one of the blue bloods of college football, USC. You know, we're talking the big time came calling. Spectacular. What did your family, mother, brother, Emmett, what were they thinking? You're going to go out west to play football? What?
It was, Ohio State didn't recruit me. I was 50 miles from Ohio State, and they didn't have their eyes on me. And, I had, when I started writing letters and putting them out there, putting the feelers, I started getting, Clemson was coming around, and you had North Carolina coming around. They were getting the letters. You had Johnny Majors, and, Dom Capers was my recruiter from Tennessee. And the letters started coming in. The coach, my head coach asked me, he goes, hey, how are you doing this? I mean, what are you doing? And I'm just like, coach, just sending a few letters out, drawing some attention. It was one of those things that I didn't think I'd hear back, but I guess at that time in life, the coaches had to physically go out to the school. And, I wrote John Robinson at USC, and I remember the letter got to John Jackson. Remember John Jackson, great coach at USC.
That's right.
And, Jackson went all the way back. He came all the way back to Zane, Ohio. It's probably 10 minutes outside of Dayton, small town. He walks in the hallway and he goes, I just wanted to see if you're for real. So, I mean, came together. Well, it was interesting.
I'm happy and blessed that you did, because you and I got to forge out a great relationship as teammates and growing up in the dorms and moving on and living in the same apartment complex. And I got exposed to the other side of Tom Cox, a side that not enough people, I don't believe, in the world of all sports, specifically football, realize that there are so many individuals who have multi-talented things they do. And with you, it was the gift of music and the ability to play that 12-string guitar and the ability to write music. We wrote a song that we probably should have got published that you and I put together called the Opponent Squad Blues. Do you remember the Opponent Squad Blues?
I do. I think I got it on. I was always taping everything. I probably got a tape of that somewhere, a gold cassette tape.
Oh, yeah. And you would introduce me to your world of Cat Stevens and all that beautiful music. And we would sit in the emergency exit stairwell of this, giant hotel, basically, where the dorms were. And you would get the perfect acoustics, and you'd play that guitar. And I was just fascinated, along with the rest of us incoming freshmen, that we had a big 6'5 giant that could play the guitar and sing that way. And do you get a chance to play music at all still, or what are you doing?
That was an incredible time back then, and playing guitar. And we didn't have a lot of we were just the cusp of the internet age was coming out a few years later. But you and I, we'd go out there and play for hours, and I'd sing, and we'd have a heck of a time. But as you get through life and you get going, and it's a while back, I don't play as much. I still grab the guitar, and I'll still pound out a Cat Stevens song, and I'll still sing, from time to time. And I handed that baton over to my oldest son, Jordan, he's a heck of a country singer, and he can pound it out. But I remember teaching him, and he is the singer in the group now, the three sons I have.
That is beautiful. And speaking of that, perfect segue into never let that go, because I've seen you in little clubs and venues playing in front of people. I thought this guy's the greatest entertainer of all time. So I'm happy to hear that Jordan has kind of kept that legacy alive. Jordan Cox, Dakota Cox, and, of course, Chandler Cox. Jordan, great baseball player. How was that? We're going to talk about all three of your boys, and you give us some stories of recruiting. But Jordan kind of started it off in going to Cal Poly and playing baseball?
Yeah. Jordan was a lefty coming out of Juan Diego Catholic High School in Utah. And, it was one of those things where, we started a little late on Jordan with recruiting, because I was trying to find out. You size up your kids and you kind of figure out where the sport is and what they're going to be good at. And Jordan, we got laid into to baseball, and we had to go across the in the country a little bit and go to some schools. And we ended up picking out Cal Lutheran over in Thousand Oaks area. And, you know, it's a D3 school. And they had, you know, they had the way the scholarships worked there, they'd have some partials and things. But we just started late. And then I realized that, you know, we had to start early on the others. And I think I geared up for them. But Jordan had a good career. He was a relief pitcher. He didn't get past college. But he got part of his college paid for, which was really helped
nice.
You know, me out, which was great.
Yeah. Okay, then next in line would be Dakota, the All-American freshman, unbelievable linebacker, New Mexico Lobos. I got a chance to visit with you and the family and see him play when they came out to play Fresno State a few years ago. Now, Dakota had an interesting recruitment, too. Tell us about the things that went wrong. And these, by the way, we're talking with Tom Cox, who is a legendary USC Trojan offensive lineman, two-time starting center. He's got great, great ability. More than that, though, we all knew that he would be a great influence on his family and his children. And you've got some recruiting stories for the people that are listening on the show. Tell us about the Dakota Cox recruitment.
Yeah, so Dakota, he went to Wanigo Catholic in Utah, 3A high school, and you know in Utah they've got some larger high schools, the 5A's and the 4A's, and Dakota was, you know, it's funny because when he was young, he had just great feet. You know, he'd get out and you know, he'd play soccer, and I just knew something was bound to happen with him. I actually went out and bought his name, and if you go to DakotaCox.com, you see all the stats and everything. I mean, I bought that when he was probably, you know, 15 years ago when you could buy names. And, you know, I guess I was sizing him up as a linebacker because, you know, he had great feet. But, you know, the story with Dakota was, you know, he was at a 3A high school in Utah. You have the larger schools that are getting recruitment. And we weren't getting anything. We weren't getting anything from, you know, Utah. We weren't getting anything from Utah State, the BYU, sort of a little bit. But the interest level just wasn't there. So I told my son, I said, look, you know, just keep getting your stats. You know, he was all state there. He was, you know, everything was going on. And so we started the recruitment process, you know, one by contacting coaches and trying to, you know, spend some ideas out there. And a lot of it was late nights with him. And we would write coaches, and a lot of times, you know, we just send some film into the coaches, and we were trying to create the marketing campaign, and it was difficult. I mean, it's you know, with the day of internet, it's a difficult thing to get in front of a coach, and coming out of Utah was even tougher because, you know, they've got their eyes on those 5A, you know, high schools, and they got some bigger schools. And with Dakota, you know, one of the things that we did after he was getting all the awards and things, we created the moment. So, you know, I talked to my son about, you know, what I did was when I was in high school and how I contacted schools. And he's like, Dad, let's do it. Let's go. And I'm like, look, get in the best shape you can. You got to be ready. We're going to go to all these little mini recruitment college one-day camps across the nation. And so we mapped out 2 weeks his junior year. We mapped out 2 weeks to decide, you know, we just looked at a map. I mean, this wasn't like, okay, scientific. I'm thinking things like, okay, if we go to SMU and we go to Arizona, we go to SMU, we go to San Diego State, we kind of do a little triangle, and then we go across the country. And I mapped it all out to where basically, you know, Dakota, day after day, we went a period of 15 days out. He had to take his SAT on the road. And he was performing at all the camps. Yeah. So, I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, that process.
Yes. Yes, and then something cracked.
Yeah, so we got to, I would say we got, you know, I'm a dad, and I'm thinking like, oh my gosh, this may not work. I don't know, because we got everything from, oh, he may not be sized enough, but we got probably in our ninth, tenth camp, or you know, the tenth with Cincinnati, and we just picked that one out of, you know, just the rabbit out of the hat, and I'm like, hey, you want to go to Cincinnati? You want to go to the Bobcats in Ohio? And he goes, Dad, let's go to Cincinnati. So we went to Cincinnati. Butch Jones is at Cincinnati, and Dakota goes down there, and he's running like a 4.6. I mean, he is just, you know, showboating, and he's on fire. And Butch pulls him aside after the camp, and he goes, son, you're something. You know, we like you. And this is you know, he started, but Butch was excited. I mean, Butch was so excited. And you can't offer a scholarship at those camps, but you can the day after. And so we still had, you know, Indiana. We still had a couple more going. Dakota's excited. The day after that camp, when we were getting ready to fly out, Butch Jones calls, offers him a full ride scholarship the day after that camp to go to Cincinnati. And, you know, that's amazing. That was his first offer of scholarship.
And now Butch Jones is out of the picture.
Yeah, so the thing is, you know, we still had, when we got done with that trip, we had a couple more camps. Indiana was interested. We went back out to the west, to Utah. We still had Stanford. We had Washington. We had them all lined up. We had probably six camps. And Butch wanted he's like, hey, you're going to come to us? You're going to commit? And I told Dakota, I was worried. I mean, I was worried, you know, Dakota was a little undersized, a linebacker, 5'11", barely 6 feet. Great feet. I'm like, Cincinnati's not bad, you know. So, Son, what do you want to do? And he goes, Dad, I'm going to commit. He committed to Butch Jones in Cincinnati, and he committed. I mean, he literally committed, and Butch Jones is like, great, we love you, we're going to get you. And we go through that whole process. We stop recruiting. We stop everything going on. And lo and behold, that's the season, at the end of the season, Butch Jones goes to Tennessee.
Yes.
And yeah.
And it went radio silent. Silence.
Yeah. Yeah. That was probably one of the worst feelings I've had as a dad, to know your son commits. Because Cincinnati would send out posters, but stay committed. And Dakota did. He was committed to a verbal scholarship.
But not to slight, you know, the Dakota story, but he ends up in New Mexico and he just plays lights out football and he's a freshman All-American and he had a couple injuries, but he was, well, how many tackles? I mean, it was just his career tackles and season tackles were those, you hear those kind of numbers, you think, oh, come on, there's no way. But, you know, he finished his career like 400, how many tackles did he have when he left?
403. I mean, Dakota went to New Mexico and he tore it up. I mean, he got a scholarship. Get this, he got a scholarship from Bob Davie that came in the mail. I mean, they didn't call. They thought, well, he's committed to Cincinnati. We'll just send the scholarship in the mail. They sent a piece of paper, and we're down there looking at stuff. And he opens it up. He goes, Dad, I got a scholarship from New Mexico. I'm like, oh, New Mexico, okay, Mountain West.
Yep.
All right, put that in your pocket.
Yep.
But you know, so he goes to New Mexico. So we lose. Yep. Bush Jones goes out of Tennessee. Tommy Tuberville never calls. You know, we don't get anything out of Cincinnati. That's gone. It's a verbal. There's no contract. He goes down to New Mexico, and he just goes at it. I mean, he's freshman All-American,
yes,
first year at New Mexico, and they're like 3-9. I mean, who does that? He's on the same list as, like, Miles Jack out of UCLA, and he makes it down there. And he's a phenom, going crazy. His second year, 2014, he goes, and he's leading the nation in tackles. And as a matter of fact, he got injured about the 9th or 10th game. He blew out his knee against Boise State. And he still ended up with 12.9 tackles, led the nation. And he's got a little plaque, and University of Mexico has a plaque. And he was first team all everything in Mountain West. I mean, he had to rehab after that. And still,
I remember that.
403. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's what an experience to be at a school that – you know, he was captain 3 times, and he, you know, got bells and whistles. He got his master's degree there. He's got his, you know, his regular degree. I mean, just a phenomenal program. And one of the things that I do like is the fact that he didn't go to a school that was so overwhelming. He was the star.
Yes.
He was the billboard. He was on posters.
Yes.
I mean, amazing.
Okay.
He had an Albuquerque.
So, I get that. And it's amazing to me is that as we finish the boys off, the Cox clan, it ends with Chandler, who was the final product, I think. I don't know. I'm not in your personal life with you and your wife, but Gretchen and you. But Chandler now, he goes the other way. He gets blown up playing high school football in Florida with a nationally ranked high school team, and he's a 5-star. Everybody, he's the best at this position, fullback, H-back guy. He is a quarterback in high school. He does everything, and he's playing now for the University of Auburn. I get a chance to watch him on TV, catching balls. Now you hit the other end of the spectrum where it's not like you're trying to overachieve and trying to home for Dakota. You got your kid playing in the Southeast Conference, and you and your wife could enjoy what it's like to go watch games in that neck of the woods. Tell us about the Auburn deal.
Yeah, so you know, when Chandler, we were a split family, so when Chandler played down in Florida, you know, he played with Rick Darlington, you know, 8A high school in Florida. And that's an incredible program down there. And Rick Darlington was, you know, running it. And they just put out, you know, athletes down there. And one of the things with Chandler, he played the position Wildcat quarterback. He played fullback. And, you know, he was, I mean, All-American out of high school playing. And you know, he had so many SEC teams recruiting him. I could not get USC to recruit him, but, you know, he had no problem with the South. I mean, he had every team in the SEC wanting him. And
yes.
You know, there was not I didn't have to go hunt for that. That was just like he was in the right spot, right place. And Florida football is, you know, it's there's nothing bad about Florida football when you get down there.
No, not at all. Now, when Chandler decided on Auburn, was it the coach or what was his decision? What was the reason behind Auburn?
Well, we took some recruiting trips together. You know, we went to Ohio State. We saw Urban Meyer, and we went to Kentucky and saw Stoops, and he liked both those programs. We went up to Tennessee, and I think I went to Tennessee mainly because Butch Jones was the coach there, and Butch really wanted him, and I hadn't seen Butch since he turned off his phone and didn't talk to Dakota, and so I really wanted to show him, like, hey, you could have had them both. And so
I remember
the day, you know, Butch wanted him so bad, we were out on the field, and Chandler lays down on the field in Neyland Stadium. And Bush leans back and he goes, what's he doing? And I go, well, he's taking it all in. And he looks at me and goes, Tom, I want Chandler to play for us. And that wasn't going to happen. But when he picked out Auburn football, you know, Gus Malzahn, he really liked it down there. I mean, that was one of the things that he went there several times, went down there, you know, for Big Cat. You know, they have a day down there when everybody celebrates, and he committed during that week. I was a little surprised at that, but he really liked the program. He liked, you know, the campus. If you haven't been to Auburn, I highly recommend you go there because it's just like a big bubble, and it's a city, and it's a beautiful place. And he's loved it. He got his degree. You know, he's working on some other classes. He's at school. He's getting ready for the NFL and the draft, and hopefully get a little opportunity to get drafted. If not, he'll get a free agent spot. But he's preparing for that next level, and I think he's going to get a shot at least to, you know, participate.
Well, no question. And you see, I brought all that up, and some of you might be listening thinking, who's he talking to and what are we talking about here on The Rise? What we're talking about is this is that time of year. When you and I grew up, there was no signing day here and another signing day here. It was kind of – I don't even remember if there was like a national signing day. It was just some point in the deal they send you a letter and you fax it back or talk. But either way, the general theme of this whole thing is why I was – so happy that you agreed to come on and talk about your boys and your experience personally, was that there is a vehicle, there is a path for everyone. It doesn't have to be Auburn University. It could be Cal Lutheran. It doesn't have to be New Mexico. It could be Cal Poly. But if you want to sit around and feel sorry for yourself about why am I not getting what I believe I should get, or if your parents aren't understanding how the game works, even in today's game, with all the technology and internet and everything we do with smartphones, you have to be your best advocate for yourself. You have to represent and jealously represent your children to help the recruiting groups and help the colleges get a little more information. Because even in this day and age, it's not like it's a slam dunk. You've got to go out and do your legwork. And you obviously demonstrated that from the time that you came from Xenia, putting together your strategy of how you'd get noticed, to traveling and taking an interest in Jordan, to Dakota, to Chandler. That's of all things, Tom, and everybody who listens to our show and understands that we try to feature high school stuff, but it's the beautiful thing between the relationship between mom and dad and, of course, the children. If you take that kind of keen interest in the development of your young ones, ladies and gentlemen, anything's possible, correct?
Yeah, it's you know, it's an amazing process. I mean, going through what we went through at USC to get to USC and how we all have a path and how, you know, you get to USC and you develop the friendships. You know, I carried that when my sons were young and I could see they had some talent. And even they didn't have talent, we went out and threw the ball around. I mean, you know, this day and age, I mean, you know, recruiting is different because you have to be able to connect the dots with a parent. I don't think a high school kid or a junior high school kid can connect all the dots. I mean, there are so many sites. There's, you know, there's different sports sites. There's, you know, ESPN. You got to contact them. You got to send tapes. You got to, you know, you basically are marketing like a product. And if you're not doing that, it's a lot harder these days because you have the internet. But nowadays you have to be able to connect the dots. And I mean, I was searching emails. I mean, there's places you have to go online to, you know, search emails to get to coaches. And it's like a, you know, it's a fort to get to these people. But, you know, they have their eyes on somebody, but you don't necessarily have to use a recruiting service. You know, you can do it yourself.
That's right. Well, I appreciate the heck out of you, Tom. I'm going to let you get off early and get your full body massage done or wherever you have to go out and do there in Scottsdale, Arizona, whatever you do on a work day like this. I don't know, but I will see you hopefully. We're putting something together. Just give you this. I got to go to break, and I thank you so much, Tom Cox. But we're putting something together in La Jolla. Salisbury's got a lead on a gigantic, like, 12,000-square-foot oceanfront home down there that we're going to go reunite. That reunite thing we're going to do with all of us of that class, Jack Del Rio and all the special people of our era, we're going to get it together. So I'll reach out to you. We'll be seeing each other soon.
All right, Maddie. Love you.
Right on.
Great talking
love you
to
too.
You. See you.
All right. Thank you, Tom Cox. Well, there it was, folks. If you're wondering how to move or manipulate your sons or daughters into college, there's a couple ideas right there for you. Self-marketing. Best in the business. We appreciate you listening. Thank you very much, Tom Cox. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. I'm going to finish with Bob K. Janey and talk about this crazy thing in the NFL and why can't we change rules and get things in place in instant replay. We'll be back. You're listening to 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader.
The Rice Show is sponsored by Bowman & Associates, Fashion Furniture, Van Buren Insurance, and Firehouse Subs.
We are back here on The Rise, 940 ESPN. I'm Matt Johnson. We're here at Fashion Furniture, the best place on the planet. The hospitality, the credit department, the salespeople, the interior design element of this place is, as we all know, is off the charts. And they are local, and we support local. And you should all support because Fashion Furniture loves to give back. They represent from City College, Fresno State, to all the local high school sports out there. They're always there for us. We all need to be a part of this big family. And, of course, our Firehouse Subs. If you've got an inkling to get yourself one of the best sandwiches you're ever going to taste and also help out first responders, but also in between all that, get a discount, go on down and see your Firehouse Subs where you can get the new Spicy Cajun Chicken Sandwich, and you'll get it for half off, 50% off, Bob Cage, ain't it, if you mention you heard that announcement on 940 ESPN. 50% off the Spicy Cajun Chicken Sandwich. It's wonderful. I just had my half slice of that. And then, of course, the Hook and Ladder. Love what they do. Thanks for supporting local, as always. We got a chance to talk a little bit earlier in the show with Sean Salisbury. Thank you so much for taking time off of your busy schedule with personality, radio, television, and, of course, in the entertainment business. And then we had Tom Cox talk a little bit about his journey as his own personal journey to play Division I athletics through all his three boys and how he helped self-market those youngsters, and they all had their level of success because they had good old mom and dad pushing and supporting and doing a lot of the legwork, which I, by the way, highly suggest that all the families, and you can reach out to Pagmeter or myself, pagmeter.com. You can write a story. You can do whatever. You can reach out to ESPN. If you ever have any questions about how Coach Johnson, that's talking about me, how can I help? I'm a Madera South bred, I'll die Madera South Stallion. But I'm certainly always there to help. We're working with kids from Central, Edison, all over this valley. If you need some suggestions, if you need me to make a phone call, I'm always there for you. And here's another guy that I've always admired and became good friends with because he was always there for our valley, too, helping out all the young athletic programs out here, making sure through his career in sports and then now where he's at today that we have the perfect venues, the perfect tournaments to really showcase the great athletics. Of course, we're talking about the one and only Bob Cajanian. Bob, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Matt. How are you doing today?
Excellent. And as the past leader, president of the SJVOA Officials Association, of course, I would not be doing my job if we didn't talk a little bit about NFL rulings, instant replay, and everything else that every talking head in America is talking about right now. Did you sit, Bob, and witness as an ex-official, did you get a chance to feel both those games in the NFC and the AFC Championship game and kind of come away? What was your feeling when you were watching some of the things that were going on?
Well, first of all, I did not get to see the Rams game, and I only got the last part of the New England game, but obviously there were plenty of replays to look at it.
That you got to see.
I got to see it that way, yeah. I got a lot of phone calls from people saying, you know, is that not pass interference? How does this happen? How does that happen? And my first thing I said is, I can't answer that question until I see the play in real time. Because I got to see the speed of the play. I want to know where the official was actually standing. What kind of a view is he getting on the play? And personally, being on the field as long as I was,
yes,
in the angle that the official was, I can see how he did not rule pass interference. Because if you go back and look at the tape, you'll notice that he is pretty much straight-lined. He's back. He's not parallel with the sidelines. He's about 45 degrees back. The receiver's coming right at him. He doesn't get a real good clear look at the defender. And about the time he sees contact, the ball is just right outside the receiver's hands.
Right.
Well, ball equal to receiver and contact, we have a no call.
Yeah, and I can certainly see that. Now, of course, I thought there was another set of eyes on the party, too, that might have jumped in there and said, I didn't see it that way, but we can argue that all you want. I'm not arguing, actually. I agree with you. Because in real time, I'm watching the game from, you know, whistle to whistle, and I thought, oh, that looked a little – but when it slowed down, I was like, it was – oh my. And, of course, Coach Sean Payton, New York, you know, the Saints coach, was, you know, beside himself. But Nick Papagni, the Pag Meter, myself, doing this radio stuff for so long – this is not being braggadocious. This is a fact. We're the only ones that, to me, seem to always be years ahead of the curve on things like this potentially happening. It was truly 3, maybe 4 years ago, and I think you might have been around on show or here with us listening, when I'd always point out there's things in football, in rules and things that they do, and including the instant replay, I don't understand. And one of them I talked about years ago that now everyone's talking about. Well, wait a minute. I've got a challenge flag that you've implemented in my pocket. But there's certain things I can't challenge.
Right.
You tell me as an official, how in the world is forever, from now until now, from beginning to end, how is pass interference not a justifiable chance for me to throw a red flag and say, could you go up in the booth and can you review that? Because my guy was absolutely cleaned out without even an opportunity to catch a football. How is that not part of instant replay?
Well, instant replay is designed to take care of procedures. Did he score or did he not score? Did he lose the ball or, you know, was he down? You know, was he touched on picking up a ball and down by contact? What you're asking right now is somebody to say, Matt Johnson, I don't believe your judgment's any good. I want a second opinion.
Thank you. Absolutely. And what I'm but more importantly, what I'm saying is, if you're going to open up the genie's bottle to instant replay, why do you limit certain things? Well, by rule, that is not reviewable. What do you mean it's not reviewable? And by rule, it's 2 minutes left. We're not allowed to review anything. How, if you get instant replay, you give me two challenges. I'm allowed to use it twice. I have to stand up for this because I can't do this animation down on the seat. I get two. If I'm wrong, I lose a timeout. They've got all that right. Correct? But
correct.
They do allow me to make – if you're going to let me challenge, then why can't I challenge – for those two I get, or three I get, whatever that number is going to be, why can't I challenge whatever I think was wrong? And why can't they just say, you know what, human error, because we all know we all make mistakes. Because what's happening is we're blaming officials. I'm tired of that myself personally. I've blamed officials. I wouldn't lie to you, Bob. You know, you've seen me operate. But in the big picture, now that I see this happening in the NFL, why am I even talking and getting on you? I apologize, because it's a tough deal to make calls like that, especially in real time.
In real time.
But why isn't there an official that we all can blame that sits upstairs and we say, now, how are you missing that upstairs? That's what I don't understand. The NFL has got some thinking to do in this offseason, and if they don't take it to the next step, this is going to, like the tuck rule they had to change, this is going to continue to happen. And I saw it happen in the both games. There's Tom Brady. He's getting whacked down on by the defensive lineman, who, by the way, never hit his face. That is a pivotal moment that they called roughing the passer, essentially, on a something that never happened. That would have been a great time to say, I'd like to challenge that call, but you're not allowed to challenge that call. I saw it otherwise. I'm the guy who's most invested in this. And you and the good friends that you've been with in SJVOA and your entire career, guys that I admire, Don Smiths and the Mike Parrs and the late, great Greg Lemon, and these guys that I really admire, they always would say the same thing. Well, the whole idea of this whole officiating is we did a great job when my name was never mentioned part of the game. That's when I know that I was the best.
Absolutely.
And since you're involved, or you and your cohorts in the world of officiating are both in the game, there's players, coaches, and officials. We're all in the same family. Wouldn't they like to have the idea of saying, well, I'm not going to be thought of differently when this game's over because I absolved all responsibility of that. I might have missed the call. Wouldn't they be all for that? I don't understand.
I don't think that they would be all for that. I really
Why?
Don't.
Yeah.
Because they have gone through the training, and through the training process, based on the criteria,
right,
it wasn't pass interference. But when you go ahead and slow it down, and you go motion by motion, the criteria is met for pass interference.
Okay, so we'll hold that thought. So now, as a coach, when I make a bad decision or bad call, which I've done a lot. Oh, they're coming after me. And it's like, coach, I mean, I was, you're the coach. What was that? What, you didn't go for it on fourth down? Whatever it is, I'm responsible. So what you're saying is the officials like to make a rule, but they really don't want to actually really be fully responsible for that call?
No, the officials I know, yeah. the PARs, the Lemons, et cetera.
Most all.
They'll take responsibility for their call.
Yeah.
Okay? And they'll justify it by saying, based on my training.
Yes.
So the NFL, and I agree 100% with you on this, sometime in the off season, they're going to make some sort of a change because now it affected the outcome, and they don't want to make the outcome to be affected by, you know, they want the players to do it.
There you go.
Okay? So, the tuck rule.
Yep.
After the fact.
Yep.
Okay? The fumble.
What constitutes a catch?
After the
fact.
We
had to all suffer and watch a team lose a game because of it. Now they make a change.
Right.
Once again, going back 3 years ago, I could have cleaned all this up because I made it very clear. If you're allowing me to challenge, why are we have restrictions on what we can review and we can't? I think the entire game from seed to sale, from start to finish, is under review.
No doubt about
okay.
it. Okay.
Okay?
No doubt about it.
I got
but
you.
But here's the thing. Okay? Officials go out and work the game.
Yep.
And you have to remember their sole purpose is to make sure both teams have an opportunity to win the game.
Yep.
That's their sole purpose for being there. If you're going to start replaying every one of their judgments, are we going to...
I did not say that.
No.
I know you're not saying that. But I'm just talking about you only get so many now. I mean,
right.
There's got to be reason to this.
So are you going to now say, I don't think the guy was holding on the end. I don't think my tackle actually held that linebacker coming through. I want a second opinion on that.
Absolutely.
If we're going to take judgment out of the game...
Absolutely.
Why do you need officials in the first place?
There are going to be a lot of people on both sides of the fence. This is what I believe. And by the way, anybody who makes this argument, I think, is absolutely full of cagati. what is Johnson saying? These games are long enough as they are. You think a football game's too long? I want it to go another 30, 40 minutes every time. I enjoy watching overtime. Now, if you want to talk about soccer, I think it could be about 10 minutes of soccer. I'd be fine with that. But in the world of football, there's actually people, we're not talking baseball. In the world of football, I've heard so many people say it. Well, you know, in the spirit of keeping the game moving along, I've never left a football game live or watching on TV. God, that was too long. Football to me is the full experience. I don't care if it went from 9 a.m. till 3 in the afternoon. I'm enjoying the heck out of a game. Now, what else could be the argument for getting someone that's hired by the NFL with a crew that sits up, they already do. They got New York City watching everything. Why couldn't they say, oh, wait, quick, there's a challenge. Oh, and do it quickly, by the way. Yeah, oh, they just said it wasn't holding on that play. Put the ball back. Is it because the officials don't want to be corrected? That's, I guess, my
point. Oh, no, I don't.
They don't mind that. They're like
no,
us. I can handle it. I blew it. You got it right. There's none of that going on.
Hey, I can show you phone calls of officials I've gone out to observe.
Yep.
And they want to call and talk to me about plays and how the whole atmosphere of the game went, et cetera. They want the feedback. They want to know what they can
Good.
Do to
Good.
Get better.
Good.
There's no doubt about that. I think you hit it right on the head when you started the thing and you said,
yep.
We can't by rule, we can't review this. And by rule, this is not challengeable. And by... Well, the problem is there's nothing in the rule book that says we can challenge this.
Yeah.
So you want that ability to challenge.
Right.
You better find a way to get in the rule book. And I'm sure with Sean Payton on the rules committee, there's going to be something in the book because the NFL and all other sports entities are very good about changing rules when there's an injustice, or as they feel there's an injustice.
Right.
So maybe next year we're having this conversation that says, well, it said by rule, that's why I was able to challenge it.
Right.
So hopefully, you know, that stuff goes. When I teach officials to officiate a game and you have a question, the first two words out of their mouth I tell them is, Coach Johnson, by rule, that's not a catch.
Right.
Okay?
Yep. And my response is always, by rule, let me introduce you to my little friend. Just kidding.
Yeah.
Just kidding, Bob.
No.
I got you. It really is a good one. I love that. Now, on to the world of, as we get closer to Solander Arena, the road to Solander, another thing. You've got your hands in so many different things. Great official, great athletic director, great coach, track and field. You've done it all. But now as we get closer to the road to Solander Arena, watching all the divisions prepare the final showdowns in the league, are we all systems go? Tell us about the big show that is coming up.
The big show this year, for people who have already circled their calendars for the very first weekend in March,
yep,
need to erase that circle.
Beautiful.
And back it up a week. We're 22 and 23 of February.
Mm-hmm.
It's a week earlier. We are at Solander Arena, and the committee is full steam ahead in putting on the event.
Okay, well, we still have a hospitality area, preferably with a variety pack of foods and beverage. Or is that not in the budget?
In a single word?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. Because if not, you're going to have a hard time explaining to the PAG meter why we are stuck at the sideline only. Beautiful. Okay, so we're going to take a break, Bob. Russ, we come back from the break, we'll have approximately what now? So we're going to finish with you, Bob, right now, and bless you as you move along in life, and I will see you as it gets closer to Solander Arena and all the great work. We appreciate the heck out of you, Bob. Bob K. Janian, you're one of a kind, my friend.
You're welcome, and I'm going to come back and talk to you about a new prototype program I'm working on to teach officials better.
Oh, you're the man. Thank you so much, Bob. Well, we've got to finish this show up. We'll be back for just a brief moment, but you're listening to 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader. Back live, Fashion Furniture, the one and only, the leader of the world when it comes down to service, quality, and the best display of goods. This is Fashion Furniture. I want to thank Firehouse Subs. Listen to this. Listen good. If you just even mention today, one day only, Matt Johnson, my name, Matt Johnson, on any sandwich, they'll take 50% off. Mention Matt Johnson, any Firehouse Sub sandwich, 50% off today. It's a one-day sale. Please, let's ring the crash register. I want to thank Sean Salisbury, Tom Cox, Russ back in the studio, keeping us on the rails. Thank you. You've been listening to 940 ESPN. Get in the game.